trapped on a train trip around a dying world. And around we go. Talking Snowpiercer on this episode of Pop Life.
Digital content on W8YR is supported by Hunter Springs Landscape Artisans, helping clients throughout the Central New York community create their own unique outdoor living space for 37 years. Services and project galleries found at hunterspringslandscape.com.
Welcome to Pop Life. I'm Joe Lee. 2014 science fiction fans were treated to an interesting plot where survivors of Earth's second ice age live out their days on a luxury train that plows through snow and ice. Directed by Bong Joon-ho, Academy Award winner for the movie Parasite, Snowpiercer depicts the story of the train's poorest residents who live in the squalid caboose and their plan to improve their lot by taking over the engine room. The film, now available on Netflix and released on Netflix, I believe, received critical acclaim at the time. And now the concept has been developed into a television series. So how does it translate? Can the series sustain a story arc? Is it good? Is it as good as the movie? Helping me tackle these questions and more is my good friend Kendall R. Phillips, Syracuse University professor in the Department of Communications and Rhetorical Studies and author of several books, including Controversial Cinema, The Films That Outraged America, and Projected Fears, Horror Films and American Culture. Welcome, Dr. Spooky.
Good to be here, even though I am sheltering in place. I want everyone to know, and I'm actually constantly washing my hands. So,
Kendall R. Phillips. I'm guessing the R is for Roberto.
Oh, I like that. No, not anywhere near that. Just Ray, the most boring middle name ever.
Are you kidding me? Ray?
Ray. It was my father's name and his father's name. It was a curse passed down through generations.
Kendall Ray Phillips. Okay, there you have it, folks. There you have it. So, look, Snowpiercer the movie, 2013 science fiction film. I think it came out in 14, based on the French graphic novels. Are you familiar with those?
I am. I've read the first volume. I think it actually ends up being four volumes and then later prequels, etc. I would say the original graphic novels reminded me a little bit of, like, The Walking Dead, although these came out in 1982, so it was a real precursor. But it had a bit of that feel, and it does, you know, if the graphic novels end up influencing the TV series, it goes in all kinds of interesting places. We eventually find out there's more than one train, and the trains can leave the tracks, and it becomes quite a much more globe-spanning adventure than the movie, which stayed very much focused just on the Snowpiercer train.
Right, right. It stars Chris Evans, Captain America, Tilda Swinton, who is just an outstanding, exceptional Perfect. Actress, and Jamie Bell from Billy Elliot fame. And again, the plot, it's the second ice age. The planet is covered in snow and ice, and the train carries the last human survivors on a span of track that circles the globe. You know, lower class survivors live at the back of the train. They're called tailies, or at least they are called tailies in the TV show. I think the train is about 1,001 cars long.
Yep.
And they desire a better life. Now, when I first read the description that people were surviving on a train that went around the globe during an ice age, I first thought, "What a stupid idea! What a really goofy movie this should be." But I watched it, and it was really good. I really enjoyed it, and you know, I thought. I thought Chris Evans did a great job. I could barely recognize him with a face full of hair.
No, it's an incredible. I remember seeing this in Los Angeles because it did not get a wide release, largely due to Harvey Weinstein. If you want more reasons to hate Harvey Weinstein, he insisted that Bong Joon-ho cut 20 minutes and add an opening and closing monologue because American audiences wouldn't be able to figure out the film. Bong Joon-ho refused, so it ended up getting a very limited release. And I'm so glad it's finding an audience now, and I really hope people, because it does sound a little bit absurd, And it is a little bit of a political allegory, and sometimes it kind of hits you in the face with that. But boy, is it beautiful and provocative and thought-provoking. I really hope people track down the movie and then find the love that leads them into the TV series.
Yeah. So the movie is still on Netflix. So if you have a Netflix account, you can certainly get it there. And it might be available on YouTube as well. But it's a classic tale of haves and have-nots, the oppressed and oppressors. And the lower class of the survivors who live at the back of the train, they want a better life, and they think that they can get that by getting to the engine and taking over the train. We're going to take a listen to a piece of the trailer in which Chris Evans is, this is early in the movie too, being urged to start the sort of the fight against what are armed military or police folks. They're not quite sure if they have guns, but they're not quite sure if they have bullets in those guns. They think that they run out of bullets some time ago. But let's take a listen to a little bit of that clip.
This is it. Curtis, come on. We're out of time, man. You gotta do it now.
So I wanted to play that clip to give an idea that this is a action-packed movie. Mm-hmm. There aren't many dry moments. And it you know, when you're trying to get from the tail of a 1,000-car train to the front, it almost presents like a video game where you got to get through these different levels and defeat these different bosses. And there's all this crazy stuff going on in the middle. What did you think about that aspect of the movie, where folks are in the rear trying to get to the front and take over? What do you think of the plot of the movie?
I just think it's so brilliant, and my memory of that is always I saw it, like I said, in Los Angeles because it was a very limited release. I saw it with some friends. Afterwards, we were having a drink and talking about the movie, and I think I was the one saying, oh, it was great, but it was so absurd, the idea that people in the back are eating bugs and people in the front are eating caviar, and this is just 1,000 cars of the train. How could it be this far apart? And someone pointed out, you know, that's the world we live in now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, literally, we're a small planet floating in the middle of frozen nothingness, and some of us are living, you know, very well, and other people are really struggling. So I thought, as an allegory for the broader kind of global world, it's powerful. And you're right, but it's not preachy, and it's not slow and tedious. It is an action film. It's exciting. Chris Evans is great. I just think it's a film that really, if you think about it, really provokes some serious thought.
Yeah. There's so obviously the world is super cold. It's below 100 degrees Celsius. Over minus 100 degrees Celsius, if I'm saying that correctly. There's a scene where they punish someone on the train, and they stick his arm through a hole in the train to let his arm freeze. Yeah. This is after the I think it's after the rebellion, and when they pull out his frozen arm, they then smash it to smithereens with a sledgehammer.
Oh, it's so chilling. And the other thing is, it was actually only about a $40 million film at that time, and I think still the highest budget South Korean film ever, although it is mainly in English, so if people are afraid of subtitles, you can still watch the movie. But it looks beautiful. Like, the squalor looks so squalid, and then the splendor and luxury up in the upper class looks so luxurious. It is just a beautiful film, in addition to being exciting and thought-provoking.
Yeah. So the movie has a definite arc. It has a climactic ending, as you would expect in a movie. So now, how do we expect that to translate to a television series where, you know, there is no, if they want multiple seasons out of this, there is no defined ending yet, right?
Right.
So what they're doing is utilizing the plot in when we get to the television series as a mystery, as a murder mystery, at least to start, right?
Yeah.
The TV show stars Daveed Diggs and Jennifer Connelly. Love seeing her back on the small screen. It's set in 2021, 7 years after the world becomes a frozen wasteland and follows the remnants of humanity who inhabit a gigantic, perpetually moving train that circles the globe. So we have the basic plot is still there. But the devices that we need to carry a multiple episode season is going to rely on more episodic stuff.
Right.
So what do you think of that? You think that can be effective?
Absolutely, and I think it's the only way to be effective. You're right. The movie is this beautifully self-contained arc that comes to, I think, an absolutely perfect ending, but there's not a whole lot of, there's no sequel opportunities, or not much sequel opportunity after the end of the movie Snowpiercer. So if as network TV seems to always want to do, you want to create something that lasts several seasons, you're going to have to blur that genre with something else.
Yeah.
And I think starting with a kind of classic film noir detective story, we've got David Diggs playing Andre Layton, who's the kind of reluctant detective who doesn't want to get involved but is kind of forced and blackmailed and bullied to getting involved in a murder case. I don't know that the murder will end up being the most important part of the plot, but it's a great device to get us digging into the world, because Andre Layton, even though he lives in that world, as a detective, he's going to have to dig layer under layer under layer to try and solve this mystery, and in so doing, open up this world of Snowpiercer for us, the audience.
Yeah, so the show, like the movie, questions of class warfare, social injustice, and the politics of survival. Here's a bit of the clip for the trailer for the TV show.
Snowpiercer is all that's left of the world. Mr. Wilford runs our train based on three principles.
Can I borrow you for a second?
Work, honor, and order. Each of us in our place.
Never forget who you are.
A tailie.
Figured out a way to survive in the shadows. How about we leave this hell behind?
Each of us knows our place. This really has a caste system to it in terms of how folks are living. Lower caste, again, at the back of the train with the higher class of folks at the front of the train. There is a scene when David Diggs' character is first brought to the powers that be to talk about solving this murder mystery, where they try to entice him with a grilled cheese sandwich and tomato soup. And I gotta say, man, I felt his emotion staring at that plate. He looked like he hadn't seen real food in forever. And he really brought that to the screen. I mean, that I could smell that soup and I could taste that cheese. I mean, he was getting teary-eyed and everything in that scene. Did you dig that?
I loved it. And I think he's incredible. And for folks who don't know the name, he was one of the original cast of Hamilton, has won Tony and a Grammy. He actually wrote and starred in a fabulous movie called Blind Spotting. So if you haven't heard of David Diggs and you like the Snowpiercer, I would recommend audiences at least to go out and track down maybe the original cast of Hamilton sound recording or this movie Blind Spotting. But I thought he absolutely he's the perfect example of that noir detective, because you feel everything through him. But you also know he's street smart, or at least train smart. Like, he gets it. He's not gullible. He's seen the world. He's been around a little while, and I like that weather-beaten character as a way to introduce us to this world.
Yeah, and I like the fact that they are sort of placing him in the middle. So he's sandwiched in between being loyal to his folks and the cause. And trying to use the upper echelons of the train society to help move that cause along. So he's trying to play a bit of a double agent role. But I can see where things will develop, where he's maybe not enjoying the job, but is getting caught up in the mystery and solving that mystery. So they, I guess they have a way of putting people in deep sleep. They wake up his girlfriend in this episode. So we're only one episode into the season, folks.
Right.
So if you plan on checking it out, you don't have far to go to get caught up. It airs Sunday evenings live on TNT at 9 o'clock, but you could also, through your cable provider, or content provider catch it on demand as well. But it's only being released after each week's episode airs. But they bring his girlfriend out of deep sleep to help, I guess, entice him into they really have to do a job convincing him to take on this role. And I think he sees a way out to use it to help move the cause of rebellion along. But he's now not trusted by his group of folks, being used by the other folks. So he's in this sort of weird tight spot, don't you think?
Yeah, and this is why I think that sort of using those old tropes of film noir are perfect. Mm-hmm. You know, you think about your classic film noir detective in his hat and his raincoat or trench coat. You know, these are the people who can walk into the fancy restaurant and ask the questions of the mayor, and then they can walk down into the dirty dive of a speakeasy and talk to the mobsters. Somehow that detective is able to go everywhere, but the great film noir detective doesn't want to be a detective. Like, they're retired or they're out of the game or they're done with it, but something lures them back in. They're enticed or they're blackmailed or they're forced to get back into the gig, and you sort of see that character being brought to life by David Diggs, and it's a great way to get us into all of this and give us an entry point.
Mm-hmm. There's already a sort of a shift in plot. In the movie, if I remember correctly, there is actually a Mr. Wilford.
Ed Harris plays
right.
The character.
Yeah. And so you heard Mr. Wilford being referenced in the clip for this is the train's inventor, owner, whatever. You heard him being referenced in the clip for the television series. But we find early on in episode one that there may not be an actual Mr. Wilford. And that's a bit of a, we got a bit of a spoiler here. I don't think it's a great surprise. I mean, when it happened at the end of the episode, I wasn't my jaw wasn't on the floor. It was like, this is interesting. So Jennifer Connelly, her character is the sort of the hostess. She's heads up. What do we call it? Customer relations, customer experience kind of
thing.
That's right. But she at the end of the show, she puts on this MIT sweatshirt, showing that maybe she's got some serious technical ability. And then she enters the engine room where apparently she is in charge.
Yeah, and I think this is a great twist away from, but it's also a great way to get out of it being, Mr. Wilford as the big bad guy that has to be got. You know, that's the plot sort of the movie, and it's maybe a little too easy. And it also is a great way to play to the strength of an incredible Academy Award-winning actress, Jennifer Connelly. She brings so much depth and complexity. It'd be so easy for her to just be chewing the scenery as the big bad guy or the heavy. But you really, in the first episode, I kind of felt as sympathetic for her as I did for David Diggs' character. I just think they're doing a good job of making these characters more 3D and complex and engaging, so that it's not simply good versus evil. It seems a lot more shades of gray.
Mm-hmm. So how do you think this goes on for multiple seasons? If you were writing this series, how would you stretch this thing out?
So I think there are two models. And I think one would be, I'd call it the Walking Dead model, which I think is a little more like the original graphic novels of Snowpiercer, where you end up having each season kind of being an arc with some sort of big heavy. And eventually, again, if it goes on as long as Walking Dead, you may follow the graphic novels in that the train eventually leaves the tracks or encounters other trains or things like that. So you might have that model where, in fact, you may end up that each arc, season arc, like Walking Dead, is kind of its own flavor. So if you think back of the history of the Walking Dead, the first season or two were one particular style. Then you had the season at the farm, which was a little bit different. Then you had the season in the prison, which was a little... So each season's kind of had a slightly different angle.
Mm-hmm.
The other that I kind of hope they follow, when I was watching the first episode, I kept thinking back to one of my favorite series, the reboot of Battlestar Galactica, which didn't go on forever.
Right.
It did a good job of having series arcs and internal arcs. It was always moving towards a kind of conclusion. Eventually it gets there, and I thought it was beautifully done.
Yeah, and had this sort of very similar aimless wandering, not aimless. They were trying to get to, they're trying to find Earth, but they're all on a ship. They're all on a fleet of ships, just like these folks are on this train. It is very similar.
It's a testament to the Battlestar Galactica creators and writers that they were able to take what exactly is equally limiting a story. You've got people trapped on spaceships. They are traveling sort of aimlessly, trying to get somewhere. But, you know, you're very, very limited. And yet the writers kept being able to make that fascinating and terrifying and exhilarating without falling into, like I call it, more the Star Trek model, where they keep encountering a different world and a different world and a different world. So I hope the Snowpiercer writers have taken some notes from Battlestar Galactica, because I think you could make a very tight, focused, exciting, exhilarating series that doesn't end up jumping the shark and, you know, kind of going in all kinds of weird, goofy ways.
Yeah. Interesting you mention Walking Dead. Also in this in the television series is Stephen Ogg, who plays a character named Pike, but he was also in The Walking Dead.
Yeah, he was Simon. Although the only thing I'll say is the minute I saw him in Snowpiercer, he looked, talked, and acted so much like the character Simon, I thought, this must be after the zombie apocalypse. The Ice Age maybe killed off the zombies. It was. He's a wonderful actor, but it was a little bit too close to his appearance in Walking Dead for me.
It was. He was almost the exact same character. So I'm going to assume that you are committed to watching the series.
Absolutely. No, I think at this point, the first episode, and I think we've kind of touched it, but, you know, for folks who haven't watched it yet, we haven't spoiled anything, because the first episode is this really smart introduction to the whole idea without hitting you over the head with it, without big information dumps. I think within, you know, that first 48 minutes or so, you get a feel for what the world is like and what's at stake for everybody. And that's a really great first episode. But it also leaves enough mystery that we say, okay, what's going to happen with Andre and his detective story? What's going to happen with Melanie and the train? Mm-hmm. How is this revolution going to get resolved? They left enough storylines available. I feel hooked. I want to see where this goes.
Yeah. You know, and I think when I first saw it being promoted months ago, I had the feeling or the thought of how the hell are they going to make this this thing happen? But, you know, when you think about it, you have 1,001 trains to explore. You have a class of people who don't know much about the rest of the train. They don't know how folks are living. They don't know how society is structured, other than the fact that they're at the bottom. So there's a lot to discover from the perspective of the Tailies. So there's a lot there, and like Battlestar Galactica, even though you have the sort of single foe, you got all these different scenarios that can play out as you're trying to get to that point. So yeah, I'm committed. I'm going to watch it. I'm a science fiction fan, so I'm going to give it a shot. But already in episode one, you can see that the quality is there.
Yeah.
The staging is there. The acting is there. I think it's going to be really good. So you and I will have to get together at the end of the season and talk about the season and see how we think some of our expectations were either met or not met.
Right. We'll be super excited or deeply disappointed. One or the other is going to happen.
Dr. Kendall R. Roberto Phillips, Dr. Spooky. Hey, man, thanks for hanging out with us.
Always a pleasure. And remember, everybody, keep your face masks on and wash your hands.
There you go. Thanks for checking out another episode of Pop Life. Be sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And please rate the show to help us reach more folks. Pop Life is a product of WAER, Syracuse Public Media. Our producer is Kevin Kloss. I'm Joe Lee. We'll see you next time.